question and answer is as simply as you can.
Listening to Novum on Jam Radio. I'm Ari Brin. This is a podcast about science fiction and our culture and the future. Our show today is about the movie Zootopia, or as it was released in the UK, Zootropolis. So I might out of habit refer to it by either name, so apologies for that in advance. Today, something very important and shocking happened in America. Today, Donald Trump was elected president of the United States. I want to offer either my sincere apologies or my congratulations, depending on which side of the political spectrum you come from. But no matter where you're from, you cannot deny the fear that this has caused online, and perhaps fear, perhaps uncertainty. But I've been reading my Facebook and the news and op-eds, and a common theme is that people are very afraid of cultural regression. Facebook is full of these statuses about people wanting to move to Canada, sort of this very dire rhetoric that there's going to be rioting in the streets and all of our rights are going to be revoked. And even on the New York Times website, I read an opinion article that asked if the American experiment had failed. If it was a failed country and we should pack up. And that's that. I think people are often pretty surprised when things don't change in the same direction. When you see this trend, perhaps, of increasing civil liberties for minorities in America. And I think this is pretty common that things don't always trend in the same direction, and we can't really predict the future. We definitely saw that today. None of the polls saw it coming. One example of this is we saw this trend towards a globalized world where things are becoming increasingly globalized and with increased immigration internationally. And now we're seeing a trend towards nationalism. And patriotism in that sense. And I think that that definitely will increase in the upcoming months and perhaps years. But I think if you do study history, you'll see that this is quite common, that too much progress too soon in one direction can lead to a repudiation of those principles. You see that now. Such as there rarely is another woman president elected when the first when there is one woman president elected. You see that with the support for Chick-fil-A when they came out against gay marriage, and that was quite surprising to some, but it was a form of backlash against this perceived too fast social progress. So you do see this retrogression, and that's really what I want to talk about today. A retrogression is something, it's this fear that something like our race could evolve backwards into primitivity or savagery. And in this case, in other cases, almost this willful one. and if you listen to my podcasts in the last few weeks, I talked about the film Idiocracy, a Mike Judge film from, I believe, 2006. I will double check on that. And Idiocracy is this film that's set, gosh, I don't know, perhaps a million years in the future, but very far in the future, where all of human society has completely regressed. Human intelligence has taken a nosedive, and the entire population of Earth is pretty much stupid. But I'm talking a faster retrogression than that. I'm talking about when the rate of this regression far exceeds the rate of progress. And we do see this fear that what we think about as civilization is unstable, that it could collapse at any moment. And like as in the New York Times op-ed, that we could see a failure of this vast human experiment. And this is all over science fiction. You don't have to look very far to find Donald Trump's match in science fiction. And in this show, I'll go into a few examples of this societal retrogression. This is quite common. But what I really want to focus on is one example in particular. And that is the movie Zootopia.
Fear. Treachery. Bloodlust. Thousands of years ago, these were the forces that ruled our world. A world where prey were scared of predators. And predators had an uncontrollable biological urge to maim and maul and...
This came out this year in 2016, and this is a very unique movie that does play with ideas of very rapid evolutionary regression, and it has its precedence in science fiction texts all the way back to, you guessed it, H.G. Wells. And this movie raises an extraordinary number of questions, such as, could we lose this all in an instant? And I mean everything that we've worked so hard to build up. I think our human society has worked so hard to graduate to this level, evolutionarily, societally. And films like Zootopia and books like The Island of Dr. Moreau by H.G. Wells posit, what if it's just this thin covering on a truth of savagery? And what if we could just lose it all? In the first part of our show, we talked about the fear of evolutionary regression, which isn't a fear you might think about all the time, but I definitely think it's there. And I also believe that this political age has definitely brought it to the surface. I think it's been visited throughout our history, that a new regime is going to come in and make everything savage again. But I want to talk a bit about this idea's legacy in science fiction. And this idea of that the vast human experiment, this human experiment in extraordinary intelligence and species-wide cooperation and globalism could be a failure. This goes back very far, but I think we could trace it back to the idea of Hobbes. Hobbes had this idea that there was a human nature, And this human nature was nasty, brutish, and short. I'm sure you've heard that before. And he thought that we could come together to become a society, but there was this nature that was lurking beneath. And you definitely see this idea in Zootopia, but we won't get there quite yet. In science fiction, we've seen so many societies or civilizations regress, and we often see it through war. And I think war is this tease of possible species breakdown. And societal collapse through atomic warfare is this common theme in science fiction. In novels like The Handmaid's Tale by Margaret Atwood or Canticle for Leibowitz by Walter Miller, they both present warfare as a precedent to this universal deterioration of society and collapse of technological knowledge. In both, medieval traditions are restored. Canticle for Leibowitz, all knowledge has been lost, so a medieval tradition has been restored, as in there are priests and the Pope is the highest source of knowledge. You should read it. It's a very interesting novel. I think commonly the effects of nuclear fallout lead to this widespread deterioration of the individual mental capacity. Do Androids Dream of Electric Sheep by Philip K. Dick or The Sheep Look Up by John Brunner. In both of these, the entire population of Earth is regressed in intellectual capacity, curiosity, and dominion over nature. And this has occurred in our real history. Science fiction doesn't just make stuff up, I mean. In response to Chernobyl, Hiroshima, and other man-made chemical and nuclear agents have been proved to adjust the evolutionary fitness of whole societies. And of course, when we see a fictional retrogression, we're asked, what are we? And these works almost ask us to revisit our entire evolutionary history and find the earlier stage that we are regressing to. Almost as though a shroud is being lifted and our true selves are being exposed. And often it's just this period of savagery that we return to. And I think we've put a lot of pressure on ourselves as humans to be this civilized beacon for the animal kingdom. In fact, we do something to ourselves that we can't help but do to almost everything, whether animal or non-sentient. We anthropomorphize. And I'm not sure if you've heard of anthropomorphism, but anthropomorphism is the attribution of human traits, emotions, and human intentions to non-human entities. That's just from Wikipedia. I'm sure you could attach onto that. And this is considered a staple of innate human psychology. We can't help but do this. We can't help but think a tree is sad when it's cut down. Or that two animals, when they put their mouths together, they're kissing. There are many, many examples of this. And this has been used as a device in storytelling since stories have been created. So as long as stories have been created, we have been anthropomorphizing animals, making the wind or the sun or the moon into human beings. A very important aspect of how we anthropomorphize is how we anthropomorphize the lower animals in the kingdom. We see this today in Disney, for sure. Almost every movie about animals that is made has anthropomorphized animals.
Timon!
Yeah?
Ever wonder what those sparkly dots are up there?
Pumbaa, I don't wonder. I know.
Oh, what are they?
Tell me, when is the last time you've seen a animated movie about animals where they really looked like the animals you'd see on the street or in the woods? I don't think it'd be incredibly compelling. It might be kind of sad. I'm not sure what emotions they could squeeze out of that. Think back to when you were a child. You definitely read stories about anthropomorphized animals. I remember reading one about an anthropomorphized caterpillar. There's definitely a train. That's not an animal, but from everywhere, from Brer Rabbits to Freddy the Fish video games. I could go on and on about this. And I think why this is being done is to be able to empathize with the animals and allow them to act like humans. This definitely is what occurs in the movie Zootopia. This is a film about anthropomorphized animals that live in an animal kingdom, this beautiful utopia called Zootopia. But this is one of the only movies I've ever seen, and I would be very curious to hear other examples of this. If you can find them, please leave them on my Facebook page. This is one of the only movies that deals head-on with the topic of anthropomorphism and makes that the central tenet of the film. I hope I've set the stage for this discussion. Perhaps you're still a little confused about how this movie belongs in a science fiction context. But I will definitely make that case. I believe it does. Because, first of all, Zootopia is presented within an evolutionary context. The film's opening lines are
fear, treachery, bloodlust. Thousands of years ago, these were the forces that ruled our world. A world where prey were scared of predators. And predators had an uncontrollable biological urge to maim and maul and...
I find that very interesting. It opens with this scene of wild animals that look very much like an animal you'd see in the wilds, creeping through a forest and about to attack the prey. When this happens, of course, it switches to reality, and this is just a play that school children are putting on together. So there's a child lion and a child rabbit, and they're acting out what used to happen thousands of years ago before everything changed. I find that very interesting for many, many reasons. Of course, it's a fabulous opening. It immediately captures your attention. It's well done. But it gives it a sort of scientific or evolutionary context, especially those three words together: fear, treachery, and bloodlust. It sort of sounds like Hobbes, nasty, brutish, and short. Is that just me? Maybe. But also, the fact that it strikes this very deliberate contrast between the animals. I don't have a better word for that, so I'll go with that now. And the anthropomorphized animals. The anthropomorphism in this movie is very similar to how it normally would be in a Disney movie. So they have the normal anthropomorphic characteristics, such as the ability to walk upright. They wear clothing. They have very enlarged eyes full of emotions, and they display the full range of human facial emotions and characteristics. However, you can still tell that one is a lion and one is a rabbit. So they don't make clear, which frustrates me very much, about what happened in those thousand years. Obviously, this takes place in a world without humans, where apparently animals are free to become intelligent and walk the earth and build cities. Of course, this is not explained, but that's not the important part. Zootropolis, or Zootopia, is an allegorical animal tale. And it's a very powerful film. It got great reviews and it was a box office hit. yet it explored modern racial tensions and human societal woes. It's pretty heavy stuff if you think about it. This film takes place in a utopic paradise. The world has become a utopia for animals of all sizes, all shapes, all creeds. And all these forms of anthropomorphized animals live together in this 21st century metropolis called Zootopia. And the actions, work, and social manners of these animals, it's all essentially human. Violent warfare between predators and prey is distant history, as you have just heard, and reenacted by school children in these educational performances, which is important, so history doesn't repeat itself. And all while animals have long ago adhered to this social contract. And to be a citizen in Zootropolis, you necessarily have to be very docile, and I assume vegetarian. Perhaps they eat fish. I did not see any fish in Zootopia. However, even though they have moved beyond these primitive, savage ways of the past, these vestigial tensions remain between these two former classes of predators and prey. And the rabbit protagonist, the main character, Judy, she's harassed by members of the predator class as a child. And before she moves to the city of Zootropolis, her parents give her this mace-like substance to protect against foxes. So they're not that far out of the woodwork, apparently. All right, so here is the unique twist of Zootopia, and this is just what floored me about this movie. I'd never seen a film that took this approach. Some predatorial animals in Zootopia are going savage. And when they go savage, they are shedding all of their civilized pretenses. They lose all anthropomorphic characterization physically. They lose the ability to walk upright. They lose their clothes, lose their enlarged eyes, lose anything that makes something an anthropomorphized animal. And they revert entirely back to their realistic form. And they're suddenly hungry for flesh. And they're unable to recognize spouses, children, or friends. And without any explanation for these occurrences, the prey class of Zootropolis, such as the rabbits or the sheep, they begin to discriminate against any animal born with the predator class. And of course, the perceived going savage is parallel to the real savagery of Zootopia, which is the discrimination against these predators for what turns out to be unrelated to their biology. I think it is interesting that everyone who goes savage is in the predator class, in which the instinct to eat meat has been repressed over a very short amount of time. But it's hard to analyze it in that way because you're not sure what Disney was going for here. But in this, racial tensions are exaggerated between these two social classes, and fear and societal racism begin to tear at the political fabric of Zootopia. And this suddenly deteriorated society immediately underscores Hobbesian questions about the wild animal's ability to repress its brutish nature within this regimented civilization. That sounds pretty relevant to me. This fear that civilization is ephemeral, that what's really here to stay is our will to survive and this brutish nature. And I think perhaps inadvertently, Zootropolis causes us to wonder whether human civilization and morality are unjustly applied to the animal, and perhaps unjustly applied to ourselves. See what you think about this next part. In her sleuthing into the spreading savagery, Judy, the rabbit protagonist, is shocked to find herself in an animal nudist colony.
You should talk to his yoga instructor. I'd be happy to take you back.
Oh, thank you so much. I'd appreciate that more than you can imagine. It'd be such a... Oh, you are naked.
Huh? Oh, for sure. We're a naturalist club.
Yeah. In Zootopia, anyone can be anything. These guys, they be naked.
Gongi's just on the other side of the pleasure pool.
Does this make you uncomfortable? Because if so, there's no shame in calling it quits.
The fact that all animals in this world are fully clothed gains deep significance. And the vague historical setting of this film acknowledges that there was a time in which animals behaved like animals and presumably went without clothing. But now, very similar to the well-known parable of Eden and Eve and the apple, the animals have become ashamed of their nudity. It seems pretty pointless, if you watch the film, that these animals with a heavy fur coating are wearing clothing. Gee, it's a little depressing, right? I don't think they've really gained anything there but shame. That is a different conversation. But this unjust application of human morals to animals is a topic that H.G. Wells' The Island of Dr. Moreau explores with much greater depth. Just completed our discussion of the movie Zootopia, the Disney movie that I hope I convinced you was of some science fictional interest. But the next book is definitely of science fictional interest. In fact, it was written by H.G. Wells, who some may consider the father of modern science fiction. And I know I've talked a lot about H.G. Wells on this show, and maybe that's just because it's what I'm reading a lot for my science fiction classes here at Dundee. But I'm about to talk about one of my favorite of his novels, and that is The Island of Dr. Moreau. This book was written in 1896, so quite a long time before Zootropolis or Zootopia. I really cannot decide on the name there. This presents a much earlier depiction of the anthropomorphized animal. In this book, I'll quickly summarize what happens. A shipwrecked biologist named Prendrick is picked up by a ship, which with its cargo of animals is headed to the island of Dr. Moreau. And this island is the hub of operations of this famed vivisectionist, Dr. Moreau. And vivisection, for those of you who aren't familiar with the term, it is thankfully an outdated term, but it is the experimentation on animals. And it is an extremely painful experimentation, and it has passed out of favor and hopefully will continue to. But on his island, Dr. Moreau practices science experiments in secret with his assistant, Montgomery, and a few misshapen servants. They look really weird to Prendrick, like not human. He soon discovers that this island is populated by warped, human-esque animals. And they peer on the whole very fearful of him and reverent of the two human inhabitants of the islands. And he finds out that these aren't really humans at all. Or I guess it depends on what you would consider human. Rather than the vague evolutionary rationale of Zootropolis, the humanization of these animals is a brutal surgical procedure performed by Moreau. Through through a painful vivisection, Moreau reshapes what was previously animal into a distinctly human form. So all of these creatures that Prendric has seen on the island were once various animals, such as a pig or a puma or a leopard. And in his laboratory, he cuts and reshapes and, without much anesthetic, really, Moreau, he creates a new breed of humans. And it's this stunning scientific achievement, if it weren't so messed up. And he does this for his interest alone, and the book touches on it in many ethical dilemmas that might already be quite obvious to you. But what I find most interesting about this book is not the uplift of these animals, which is uplifting animals into a human-like intelligence, because when he does this procedure, the animals can speak a very primitive version of human language. They walk upright. They look somewhat human. They have very primitive culture. At the end, and I won't spoil why, but Prendric is left alone on the islands with all of these anthropomorphized animals. He discovers that the procedure is temporary. No matter what Moreau does, he can't get these animals to stay human for long. Instead, they regress, and over time they lose the ability to speak, the ability to walk upright, their human facial characteristics. Does this sound familiar? It's exactly what happens in Zootopia. And Prendric is extremely disturbed by what he has seen. When he goes back to England, he can't help but have this fear that at any moment, the people around him could turn into animals and lose their humanity. This fear that culture is ephemeral and can't last, and what's really beneath is the nasty, brutish, and short. So, how does this relate to Trump? In my mind, this is very clear. This fear of regression, of societal regression, that now we have been going in a direction of progress, but now we've turned around, we've turned the car around, and we're going back the other direction, and it's nonstop to savagery from here. And this is an idea that has been around for hundreds of years, that we are just civilized animals, and finally someone exposes it. But I think the story is more complicated than that. And I would watch Zootopia over the Island of Dr. Moreau if you want a more optimistic view of this, which I think I have. I don't think it's going to be that easy. I think that we've worked too hard for the civilization to be taken away in just an instant. Yet, we must be diligent, because I believe that there is real precedent for these thoughts, that there are real examples of losing what you don't continually work for. And as an American, of course, I am experiencing the uncertainty and fear that I think a lot of my friends and family are experiencing. I don't know whether I made you more afraid or less, but I believe that reading science fiction, as always, is just one way to increase understanding and look at the possibilities and understand that people have thought these things through and we can come out the other end of this. If you would like to check us out, we have episodes on our Podomatic page, which is, I believe, podomatic.com/novum. I really should know that. But as always, we have a Facebook page, which is facebook.com/novumpodcast. I would love it if you would like the page, and we have links to episodes on there. And you can also get in contact with me over message or any other way you would like. I would love to hear from you and what you thought about the show. And I will see you next week on Nova.